Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, so I'm just going to go ahead and go with starting counterspin now, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a former U.S. diplomat to Cuba, Wayne Smith, wrote once that Cuba seems to have the same effect on American administrations that the full moon once had on werewolves. It comes to mind as you hear of National Security Advisor John Bolton denouncing Cuba's, quote, malign influence and ideological imperialism, close quote, to an audience including veterans of the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, no less. And that's the reason, he said, for renewed sanctions on the country, including restrictions on U.S. citizens' ability to travel there. That all could be occasion for the U.S. press to explore the United States' international outlier stance toward Cuba. We'll talk about what's happening with Netfa Freeman of the Institute for Policy Studies. Also on the show, corporate media would have us believe that they are very interested in climate action, but they're failing a key test of that, which would be taking seriously the lives and deaths of people on the front line. The recent court victory of Ecuador's indigenous Guarani against the government's push to auction off their land to oil companies brings together lots of critical things: biodiversity, the global impact of the Amazon, the integrity of agreements between indigenous communities and the state, and legal protections for nature. But coverage suggests it's just not that interesting to corporate media.
Okay, bear with us. We're getting ready to start with a Radioactive magazine, starting right now.
We'll get the story from Reynard Loki, editor at the Earth Food Life Project of the Independent Media Institute. That's coming up, and we'll get straight to it. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you by the Media Watch Group FAIR. The Trump administration announced a ban on people-to-people group travel to Cuba, a sanction merited, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin explained.
Welcome to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. On May 23rd, we spoke with Dr. Connie Campbell, who includes being a psychometrist as one of her specialties, and she has a Ph.D. in literacy and psychology. We had been talking about the highly disparate views on global warming displayed in the 2016 Republican and Democratic Party platforms. At the conclusion of our show on May 23rd, I felt we had much more to talk about, and Dr. Campbell has graciously agreed to another interview. So, Dr. Campbell, welcome back to Radioactive Magazine.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, okay. Dave.
Thank you. During our last show, we talked about the attitudes underlying statements made in the Republican Party platform towards the issue of global warming. Statements I quoted then included that they referred to radical environmentalists who are a self-serving elite that are subordinating the public's consensus to the goals of the Democratic Party, and those environmentalists rely on shoddy science, scare tactics, and command and control regulation. There are strong cultural narratives intertwining powerful denial mechanisms with climate disinformation or lack of knowledge, supporting the kinds of statements in the Republican Party platform. These dynamics fly in the face of overwhelming scientific evidence of warming of our climate by human activity, along with common sense observation and knowledge by almost everyone the climate's patterns are rapidly changing. In our last conversation, you talked about fear and defensiveness in these attitudes reflected in the Republican Party platform. Can you expand on these observations about the underlying dynamics of these strong cultural denial patterns and the reality of human-induced global warming?
Well, whenever I see strong defense mechanisms, righteous self-indignation, all kinds of exaggerated form of disgust and rejection, I'm always very curious about what is going on underneath. It's when you're getting at the level of fear and disgust in the brain, you're reaching at very low levels of personal security and safety. And it's triggering aspects of the brain that are not mediated by forethought and reflection. So I always have a feeling that we're dealing with something that is a great conflict for the person involved, so much so that it has to be repressed. It first has to be suppressed, and then it has to be repressed, and that reality has to be redefined so that they can keep their self-image intact. A crucial issue here, I think, for climate change and for all of us dealing with climate change is, what is the definition of reality? We've got to depend on science to help us construct reality, and we're drifting dangerously into a public discourse in which what we feel becomes reality. What I want it to be is real. And we've got to rigorously defend against that. We've got to find some common ground based on how we define reality. This is no different from when you have orthodox points of view that the Earth is the center of the universe for all kinds of important reasons, that we're supporting all kinds of institutions and propping them up, to the reality that the Earth circles the sun. And that is truth. So we can't always know full truth, and reality is in a changing flux, but we can agree upon certain fundamental principles that are accurate and intact at this time.
Yeah, in previous interviews with a woman named Pithi Pei on we were exploring her interviews with psychologists in her book on America on the Couch in relation to this issue. We did talk about how there is that there can be the development of sort of a collective psychotic state.
Yes, that's true.
Where you have a significant part of the population that just flat out denies reality. And if you don't come to some sort of resolution to this, then you have a significant problem. And in this case, you have an existential threat in the form of global warming. And there are, you know, there's every major national scientific organization on the planet affirms the reality of human-induced global warming. And there's no major scientific organization that denies the fact of human-induced global warming.
Well, then, it might relate to that we have a collective guilt about it. And feeling guilty is very uncomfortable. And it's related to feeling defective and inadequate and small and insecure. Because we learn guilt in early childhood. So many times when we feel guilty and we're uncomfortable with that, we're not doing the healthy thing by addressing that. What is the cause of this? Why do I feel responsible for this? And instead, we try to cover it up or deny it. And when you're in conflict with yourself like that, the toxins slip through the barrier in many ways. Mm-hmm. And it actually is very destructive, because we're not dealing with sincere, authentic matter with each other.
Right, right. Well, I know there was one of the psychologists that we touched on last year with Pithi Pei was a woman named Mary Pfeiffer, who is an environmental activist and author and psychologist up in Nebraska. And she pointed out that there is a tremendous amount of psychic energy that is put forth in denial and maintaining that denial.
That's correct.
So the issue is, so there's just an incredible amount of psychic energy that's getting built up to
unproductively, yes,
unproductively in maintaining a position that's not maintainable.
Right, right. Not in a healthy way. No.
Right. So you have the cultural narrative that allows for that allows for withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement. You have a cultural narrative which allows for the taking apart, the dismantling of the Clean Power Plan. You have a cultural narrative that allows the rise of fossil fuel corporations to the highest levels of government. So, but on the other hand, there are very positive aspects in society, and you know, take a look at Governor Brown of California, who has made great strides. California has made great strides in promoting alternative energy, including, by the way, Governor Schwarzenegger who was a Republican prior to Governor Brown.
Well, I think we're also looking at, and we've talked about that history repeats itself, but it doesn't repeat itself in exactly the same way. So while the same kinds of ebbs and flows of conflict happen, different players are involved around different issues in different priorities under different circumstances. And so we're constantly fighting certain battles over and over again, but we can't solve them in the same way. And government may have been the predominant player in the 20th century around this issue, but we might be needing to look to subgroups like California, the eighth largest economy in the world. Uniting with New York is very powerful. I believe that united with New York and Washington in an agreement.
Yes, Governor Brown, Governor Cuomo, and I forget the governor's name in Washington, they all banded together after President Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement and stated that they were going to abide by the guidelines of the Paris Climate Agreement in their states.
So if we look also at global international brands and companies and corporations, if you look at millennials, they rate social responsibility, 59% of them say it's one of their highest, most important reasons for buying from a company or consuming from a company. You're looking now at something that's beyond government. You're looking toward other institutions that might emerge as leaders or instruments for change, and it may be that we're looking in the wrong direction for some of these things. I think we will still need government because broad policies do make a difference, and we are looking at a time frame that is urgent.
Yes, yes. Speaking of that urgent time frame, I'm going to pivot and now talk about a group. There is a group on the farther end of the spectrum as far as environmental groups as far as environmental groups are concerned, and that is a group called the Climate Mobilization. They cite the existential threat to billions of humans and millions of species as a reason to call for a World War II level mobilization to achieve net zero emissions by 2025. In the U.S., this group was founded by psychologist Margaret Klein Salomon in 2014. She emphasizes the need for environmental activists to enter what she calls emergency mode, quote unquote, and she criticizes mainstream environmental groups for their failure to do so. A sample of what they stand for are: they advocate complete takeover of the U.S. economy by the federal government, along with a strong bureaucracy to enact and enforce standards. They call for the banning of all fossil fuel transportation by 2025, 8 years from now. They call for the decommissioning of all fossil fuel infrastructure by 2025. They call for the widespread rationing of goods and services to significantly alter the American lifestyle. Their goal is for the world to achieve net zero emissions by 2030, and I assume by the same methods. These concerned and intelligent citizens are obviously responding to the real existential threat posed by global warming and the mass extinction of species. However, and this is my assessment, their demands fly into fantasy, envision a highly bureaucratized autocratic state, ignore current political realities, and the fact, if they were successful, they would erase only 15% of the worldwide emissions, which is the U.S. share. having heard this information on the climate mobilization and a few of my assessments, what are your responses to that?
Well, I think the first thing that I am reflecting on is that many times very bright, learned people, people who are experts in their domain, have a mistaken belief that they're therefore suitable to be experts in other domains. This was a research done on major sports figures, and they were interviewed and said, if you were not the leading base runner or hitter or pitcher or basketball player or football player or whatever in this profession, do you think you would have been a megastar in another sport? And there was a very high percentage of them who said, yes, secretly, I think that I would have been, if I wasn't a great basketball player, I would have been a great golfer or some other sport.
Baseball player.
Tennis player, whatever. And actually, it's shown that that's not necessarily true. And I think that academics and intellectuals who hold a great deal of information are very learned and have tens of thousands of hours in a field can come to feel a lot of righteous indignation that they are the expert and they know better than anyone else. That doesn't translate then into another domain such as civic responsibility or leadership. And so you're seeing now the primitive aspects of those individuals trying to translate their science knowledge into civic action, and it is at a standard that they would not accept in their own fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think another thing is that, you know, they really do point to World War II as sort of their template. And but the thing about World War II mobilization was that it was a 3.5 or 4 year deal with the United States, and the reality is that the forces that humanity has unleashed is the climate will not return to what it has been, and the issue is whether or not we can reduce emissions to the point where catastrophic warming does not occur.
We're past the point of no return.
We're past the point of no return as far as that's concerned, and we're looking at hundreds of years or maybe thousands of years where humanity will be dealing with a climate that is changing quite a bit. But this period of history is the fulcrum. This is the fulcrum point, and they get that right. They get that right.
That's correct.
That's for sure. But
I think we could use one more analogy here, David, if I can use one more sports analogy.
Okay.
Many times there are groups who feel very strongly about something, and they're frustrated that they're not able to – the position isn't mainstream and is unlikely to be mainstream. And so they try to move the goalposts not to the back of the sports field, but they try to move it outside of the stadium, past the parking lot, into the next state. And their assumption is that if we move the goalposts all the way, miles away from where the ball will have to come to us, rather, and we will move it closer to our end of the stadium if we move the goalposts so further out that the compromise will somehow arrive.
Right.
And it is not a solution. If you look at, for example, how unions negotiate, many times they would say, okay, we want a 50% raise or a 25% raise. And the company would counter and says, okay, I'll give you a 1% raise. And then it ends up still coming within a range much closer to the original company's position than to the 25%. But there's an assumption that if we get this, you know, that we will anchor the discussion over here into this extreme so that we will pull the movement toward us. And it just doesn't generally work that way under these kinds of conditions.
And why does it not? Their demands are obviously in the realm of fantasy, as far as I'm concerned, and not achievable. So it's just sort of. Do their demands? It seems to me that their demands would just create opposition from the other side.
Well, or they just pick up the ball and leave. So it's somewhat like buying a house. Let's say I want $100,000 for my house, and you offer $5,000. Well, if I counter and say I want $200,000, and you offer 4,000, we're not going to get anywhere. So it's unlikely that the negotiation will continue, and you end up being irrelevant and out of the picture.
Well, and I think there's also a psychological payoff. I think there has to be some sort of psychological payoff in the fact that you declare that you know this situation to be true, and that you know the only way forward, and you put forth a proposition which cannot be accomplished, and there has to be some. There has to be a psychological payoff in that.
Yes, it's very reassuring to have beliefs rather than having to deal with knowledge, where you're absolutely correct that you're right and you have that certitude. It can be very comforting. And it's a predisposition. It's an authoritarian predisposition. Mm-hmm. It's just not effective in terms of civil negotiations and debate and the winning of hearts and minds.
Yeah, there's would you say that there is a similar dynamic between the attitudes underlying the denial positions that support the Republican Party in their attitudes and the dynamic of irrational demand on the part of the climate mobilization? Are there any similarities there that you can see?
I think if we imagine a horseshoe or a capital U, the letter U, the two extremes actually are closer together at the top of that U than with people who are located on the bottom part of the U, either to the left or to the right or at the middle of this, mm-hmm. trying to understand it. And the crucial issue is good faith and trust. What is really the good faith information we need to know and understand? And how do we communicate this? And how do we interact with each other with respect? And I want to use the word genuine love and understanding. We're not going to be able to save the planet if we are hating each other. I mean, this is the antithesis of the interrelationship that we need with our planet and the animals and plants and the earth and the air and our whole environment.
Right. I'm going to pivot just a little bit at this point. I'm going to read a statement and then we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Primarily, I perceive environmental organizations to be engaging in very reactive actions to the latest environmental outrage. Emails, always urgent, to give money so they can fight the latest outrage. Sign this petition. Call Congress. Give money. Urgent calls to organize a rally in opposition to the latest outrage. I don't perceive much focus on communicating an overarching vision that guides action or a constructive set of policy actions that everyone can basically agree to, such as advocacy of national legislation patterned after Germany's legislation in 2000 or 2001, setting a goal of 80% carbon reduction by 2050 with policy mechanisms enacted to achieve this goal. The climate mobilization is right to point to the existential threat facing billions of humans and millions of species, but widely misses the mark in proposing a worldwide bureaucratic state to control all aspects of human activity. Within the environmental movement, what is lacking, from my perspective, is a consistent message that the Earth is a living whole, that we are part of it, that we must envision a world where humanity lives in true relationship with Earth's living processes, and consistent advocacy of a broad outline of steps to move us in that direction. What feelings and observations do you have on this issue, and what suggestions would you have for the environmental movement to begin to emerge from a primarily reactive dynamic?
What I'm seeing is you're clearly calling for transformational leadership. In the past, we've looked to transformational leaders around which we can coalesce a movement. I'm not sure if we really have that capacity to the degree that we might have had in the past, a Martin Luther King or Robert Kennedy or someone that could emerge as a seminal figure in a movement, mainly because of the communications technologies that have fragmented the way we receive and process messages and the polarization that we've had. However, that means that we have to look to ourselves and to see what's transformational that we can each do our, in our own way. There are many, many times that a movement seems stuck. Not only a social movement like the civil rights movement in that you go decades and decades without much progress happening, but there are bubbles. There's the warm current under the ocean that is there whether you see it or not that can help create change. And there will be the opportunity that we need to seize. We've got to be able to recognize the opportunities we have to move forward. And then we also have to trust that the future will bring us unexpected opportunities, breakthrough solutions that we can't anticipate now. But when they come, we have to be ready to seize them and to work to get behind them for the progress we need.
Right, right. Well, I know that the Pope, when he came out with his encyclical in 2015 or 2016 now, I can't remember the year, that he did talk about how there was no such thing as an insignificant act, and that it was important for each individual to be able to accept the pain that comes from recognizing that the world is in serious trouble, and being able to sort of accept that pain, process that pain, and at the same time make a good assessment as to what your skills are, where you are in the scheme of things, and take action from that place. And I truly believe that transformational work will come, or that transformations will gradually develop from millions and tens of millions of people all over the world, or hundreds of millions of people all over the world, taking these steps. And they are. I mean, there is a great deal of things that are being done all over the planet, including in the U.S. Believe it or not, So, you know, there is hope, but I do think that the environmental movement is stuck in a reactive mode. I don't perceive them as proactive in any real sense, and they have to begin to be able to move out of that. And I think, to me, for the environmental movement to be able to express an overarching vision of, you know, that we envision a world that which where humanity is living in concert with the fundamental processes of our living planet, and not in fundamental destruction of the living processes of our planet.
Okay, and with that optimistic note, we want to thank you for joining us still on our Radioactive Magazine this evening. Next week, tune in, and Craig LeBeau will be providing a discussion with ACLU and their Smart Justice campaign. And as far as upcoming events are concerned, there's a right tonight, the Kansas City Democratic Socialists of America are having an event at the Mud Pie Vegan Bakery, 1615 West 39th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. That's just 30 minutes from now. And they're going to be discussing the next steps in their action to abolish cash bail and pretrial detention. Tomorrow night, June the 12th, 5:30 to 7, the Canvas for a Safe and Welcoming Wyandotte County is presented by ACLU. They're going to canvass the neighborhood and talk to the immigrants about the information in the community and available resources to help those in need. And then Thursday, June 13th, 6 p.m., our good friends at Moore Squared, the Metropolitan Organization for Racial and Economic Equality, presents a celebration and commitment with food, entertainment, ceremony, and dancing. Just like Emma Goldman said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. That's on Thursday, June 13th, 6 p.m. at the Municipal Auditorium. You know where it's at, 301 West 13th Street in downtown Kansas City. For more information on that Moore Squared event, at www.moore2.org. And then Friday, June the 14th at 10 a.m., KCPT Studios, 125 East 31st Street, the KCPT Mayoral Candidate Forum with our two candidates for mayor. So thank you very much for tuning in, and keep your radio tuned right here to KKFI for Counterspin, followed by Taste of Tejano, right after the following message.
Kevin Camps on radioactive waste being transported through Missouri and Kansas.
What's so deceptive about this map is, yeah, it shows it coming through Kansas City. We had a meeting with Congressman William Lacey Clay some months back, and he looked at this map and he said, well, it doesn't impact St. Louis. And I said, well, Congressman, the entire Southeast and the Mid-Atlantic will be coming through St. Louis. They just don't show it on the map.
On the next forum, Wednesday at 6 p.m.,
from the KKFI board, staff, active members, and all of our other volunteers, thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you who have donated your time and your financial support during our Spring Fund Drive. There is no KKFI without all of you. That being said, we are several thousand dollars short of our goal for this drive, so we are leaving all of the thank you gifts on the redesigned KKFI.org donation page until Friday at midnight. Tote bags, the t-shirt, Collaborations Live tickets, guest DJ certificates, or the combo package. We appreciate your support in whatever way you choose to give. Please visit the brand new KKFI.org and click the donate button, or check out all of the gifts at KKFI.org/thanks.